This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
But he also had, like, some other person's, like, a woman's name. Like, she stole it from you. And then, like, he gave two people credit. It was kind of weird. Anyway, welcome everybody to the Be Live OrangeBloods.com postgame show. Anwar Richardson live at DKR. I am at my home in Cedar Park following a 24-10 win by the Texas Longhorns over Iowa State in a game that leaves the Longhorns within one win over Kansas for playing in the Big 12 championship game. It was a weird weekend in the Big 12 in that the Big 12 championship game picture became so much more clear than I think a lot of people would have imagined coming into today, especially when West Virginia was up by two scores for much of that game against Oklahoma State for them to lose it. The Longhorns came into this game, Anwar, in control of its own fate, if you will, perhaps not destiny, because destiny is whatever it is that happens, but fate, you can control your own fate, and suddenly the Longhorns will when they go to Kansas. One win away from the Anwar Richardson celebration podcast.
Yes. Why don't you explain, Ketch, why don't you explain the scenarios while I get everything set up? Why don't you explain why Texas is one win away from being in a Big 12 championship game?
Well, the scenario that's played out now is that Iowa State tonight, the loser of tonight's game, as fate would have it, would have been eliminated from Big 12 championship game contention, Texas beating Iowa State. And while we're talking about the big picture, which Tom Herman may not want us to, when we get back to the smaller picture, I suppose, it was an absolute dominant performance tonight on every single level. I thought offense, defense, special teams, most complete game of the season. Someone said it on orangebloods.com. The score actually flatters Iowa State, because that was a game that very easily could have been a 41-3 type beatdown, and only the clock running and the fact that Texas didn't have Sam Ehlinger for a full 60 minutes and the fact that Iowa State at the end got a bit of a cheapy touchdown, that's the only thing that really kept this game from looking like the ass kicking that it was. But because West Virginia loses to Oklahoma State in Stillwater today, the Longhorns are in a position where if they win next week, they're in. Because if West Virginia loses to Oklahoma in Morgantown next week, they'll have three Big 12 losses, so they wouldn't be a factor. And if West Virginia beats Oklahoma, then Oklahoma would have two Big 12 losses, but they would be in a tie with Texas, and Oklahoma would be out. So we're left in a situation where, going into an early game, thank God, Anwar, we get to whatever the hell happens in Lawrence next week. We get to be done with it kind of in the middle of the afternoon, late afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then we get to just chill.
You get to watch. Here's the thing, though. All we're watching, though, Ketch, at that point is to see who Texas will play.
Yes. Assuming that they go into Lawrence and handle their business, and Texas is a better football team than Kansas. I think that Kansas will put up a fight. It will be David Beatty's last game as coach. They put up a fight tonight in Norman. They put up a fight a week ago against Kansas State. I think it will be a Kansas team that plays Texas hard. It probably comes down to, in a lot of ways, it may be as simple as, with all due respect to Shane Buechel, who was 10 of 10 tonight, perfect. And filling in the role departed by Sam Ehlinger. And it's so weird, Anwar. There was a moment early in the first half when Sam just kind of gave his body up in a way. And I thought to myself, if Sam stays for two more years, he'll miss he's going to miss games. It's just the way he plays, unless Sam Ehlinger ever pulls back the reins a little bit, it may be that Sam Ehlinger's a guy that every single season maybe misses a game here or there. It takes. So I thought it was bruised ribs at first, and it turned out to be the shoulder again. But if Sam Ehlinger plays next week, I have no doubts that Texas will beat Kansas and play in the Big 12 championship game. I think it'll be a tougher game, but they were in a different class tonight from Iowa State on war. They, from the very beginning of the game, offensively, Texas did what it wanted to do. They ran the ball really well in the first half. It's almost amazing that the final game numbers weren't as impressive as it looked like it might be when I think they had almost 160 yards rushing in the first half. They never really got that going in the second half, but they played pitch and catch with little Jordan Humphrey when they wanted to. And defensively, they were sensational tonight. They made Brock Purdy look like a true freshman quarterback that may have been a little bit in over his head. They limited the damage that Akeem Butler did to them. I mean, if I say going into the game, 99 yards receiving and zero touchdowns, I have to believe that Todd Orlando and Tom Herman and even Chris Boyd, like I think all of them would say, we're keeping that dude out of the end zone. He's not breaking 100 yards. You're not going to shut that guy out. Anwar, it was the best that I think these Texas Longhorns have to offer.
It's interesting you bring up the Hakeem Butler thing after during the press conference with Tom Herman. I asked him, I said, hey, you know, well, you guys were able to corral Hakeem Butler. He goes 99 yards, just corralling in the Big 12, you know, and it's like, well, I said, yes. I said, have you seen the past couple of weeks, coach? Yes, that was kind of corral. And there's, you know, there's so much on the table. There's so much to just undress as far as, you know, opening statements are concerned. But first of all, we haven't seen this defense all year. And we haven't seen a defense performance like this since last season. I mean, really the bowl game of last year is the first time that's the last time we've seen Texas just play really well on defense. And, you know, it started off good for Texas because on the defensive side, they didn't give up a score on the first possession. And you're like, oh, shit, here you go. That's a good break of a trend. And I kept waiting for that moment where it's like, okay, here it goes. And it didn't happen. And I thought, okay, David Montgomery, when he came in catch in the second, third quarter, you're like, uh-oh, this guy's starting off hot. And I was like, okay, maybe this is going to be it. And he just never really got off the way that we know David Montgomery can get off. Defense played well. BJ Foster was in there. He was making plays. And, the defensive line was actually making play. Hager, got in on there. And at the end of the day, I mean, they ended up getting to Purdy five times. And, Ketch, I think for me, from a defensive perspective, there was a series in the fourth quarter where Iowa State had possession, and it was sack on the first down, sack on the second down. Purdy runs and tries to jump over P.J. Locke, who pretty much then levels him. He doesn't come back in the game after that hit by P.J., by the way. And they get off the field. That, to me, was a defining moment of the game. And I think that was kind of the game-changing moment. And, you know, once we're all said and done, then, Ketch, they just kind of keep it rolling, keep it going. Shane Buechele wasn't sexy, wasn't pretty, losing some yards. And, you know, we know he was 10 for 10, but what was he? I have to see what they – and they don't credit him for anything rushing, but, and they say he only had one sack. Okay, but wasn't pretty, but probably pretty enough to get the job done. And here we are, Ketch. We are literally one game away from one, actually having to pay attention to a Kansas game, and literally one game away for Texas finishing with 9 wins. So start thinking about that. And literally one win away from this team being in a Big 12 championship game with the possibility of being in a New Year's Six Bowl.
I mean, this is a team that could still finish with 11 wins when it's all said and done. And 11 wins. This could be a team that's 11-3, Big 12 champions, major New Year's Day bowl win, and probably a top 6 or 7 spot in the national rankings. If all of that could happen, we're a long ways away still from there. And it's funny, someone mentioned it in the chat earlier that this is it's a Texas team that's come full circle. There is something romantic. You know, you go back 2 years ago when they lost that game in Kansas, and I think the signature moment of Charles Amenihu's career, even now, even in this season that he's had, where I fully believe that he'll end up first team all Big 12. He's a guy that NFL scouts are talking about. And yet when you think about his Texas career, it's hard not to think about his reaction
after Kansas,
at the Kansas game. And it was such a signature, just a memorable moment in a weird way for everything that happened that night. Charles Amenihu's reaction is one of the things that sticks out the most. And yet this is a guy that gets to go back to the scene of the crime. And I don't bring him up to, by the way, more than your tie is straight tonight, Anwar. I think you look fantastic for the record.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
But this is a chance for not just Charles Amenihu, but this senior class and the guys that were on the field 2 years ago in Lawrence. This is a chance to truly put that game behind them.
Especially for Shane Buechele, catch if he plays.
Yes. I think Sam will be okay. I believe. That's just me. The fact that he came out in full uniform and tried to give it a go makes that different than it was, I think, a week ago. Now, look, if he goes through the entire week and he's struggling to throw the ball without pain, then he's probably not going to play. But I do think Sam will play. I think Sam needs to play. But boy, if Shane were forced to play, yes, it would be a chance for Shane and everybody but Deontay Foreman, basically, to have a chance to kind of make that scene right. And it's going to be fun. Like, this Texas football team, they were really good tonight. And they were good in a lot of places. We probably can't talk enough about the defense. And what was really interesting for me about the defense was first drive of the game, I wrote down Caden Stearns looks really good. And then I wrote down Anthony Wheeler may have just had his best drive of the entire season. That was if I'm not mistaken, that was a three and out. And he was involved in the first play and then credited with a sack on the third down. And I was like, okay, the seniors came to play. And we saw Brecken Hager get the sack. And I don't remember Hager coming back into the game after that. He may have, but it seemed like he was out of the game more than he was in the game. And it did seem like he was favoring his shoulder at one point. But he got his sack. And Charles Amenihu almost had – I really wanted Charles to have that pickup of that fumble for the touchdown. But you think about – you mentioned P.J. Locke. He had a play from this game that will stick out. You could rattle off almost every senior on the team not named Patrick Vahe. But almost everybody else had a moment. Chris Boyd had a big play in this game. It was just up and down the field. And by the time you were done, by the time you got to the freshman, and you're like, hey, Joseph Asai had a big play. And then you go, Caden Stearns, as I mentioned, had a big game. And then you think to yourself, B.J. Foster was an animal out there tonight.
Yes.
It was everybody. Like, it was everybody on the team. This has been a season and a year where even when Texas wins their first seven games of the season, it feels like there's a yeah, but in most of the performances. The defense has given up a bunch of points, or there have been games where Texas won and Sam Ellinger wasn't great, you know, right? Like, that was a storyline a few weeks ago, like going on the road, whether it was Maryland or Kansas State, that they hadn't truly been good on offense and good at quarterback. They've kind of answered all of these calls. I was just really impressed. The game's over, and people will say things like, well, it's Iowa State and Texas is Texas. And, you know, Texas made Iowa State. The clock struck midnight on Iowa State. To a certain degree, that's true. But since they lost to TCU on September 27th, I think, you know, Iowa State hadn't lost to anybody. They're 5-0. And it's easy to look at what Texas did to Brock Purdy today and say he completed 36% of his passes. They made him look like a true freshman. Nobody else in the Big 12 had been able to do that to Brock Purdy coming into this game. His lowest, I haven't even looked to see what his efficiency rating was tonight, but it can't be good when you're only completing 36% of your passes. His worst quarterback rating in a game so far this season was over 150.
I got your answer. He was at 82.3.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Todd Orlando really does specialize in making bad quarterbacks look bad and making freshman quarterbacks look truly confused. We haven't seen a true freshman. Well, you know, and Sean Robinson, to be fair, not a true freshman, but that's what it reminded me of. It reminded me of the TCU game where Sean Robinson had a couple of moments, but by the end of the game, he wasn't in there anymore. And I think that Iowa State pulled the plug on Brock Purdy being in that game because they got a game they want to win next week. And they knew, man, that when we haven't even said Lil Jordan Humphrey's name on War. Swear to God, when Lil Jordan Humphrey caught the ball that went for the touchdown, as soon as the ball was in his hands, I was like, that's six. And I just, before it happened, I thought he's going to throw that guy down to the ground and then he's going to run into the end zone. And that's exactly what happened. He's really, really, really good. And he's finishing this season, truly on a heater. Like he seems like he wasn't as good this week as he was last week. That tells you how high he set the bar. But on a night when the quarterback play was conservative in the second half, if I'm not looking at the camera, Blake, it's late, man. I'm tired. These near midnight shows, you're lucky that you're even getting like coherent thoughts from me. It was a really good win, Anwar. I thought that this team saved its best game of the season for a moment that called for it.
Yeah, Ketch. I mean, I am looking forward to the dedication to Anwar podcast because we're getting pretty close to it. And, you know, this is a team, Ketch, that – you know, they lose. It's weird. You know, they lose two straight after that fantastic start. And you kind of get a little bit of a PTSD and start thinking, all right, here we go again. And they've just had these moments where you start from the beginning of the season, right? You start from Maryland and you start from the preseason hype to then Maryland. And you're like, okay, here we go again. Then they win the six games. Then they come out of a bye. They're ranked. And then you're like, and you're thinking, okay, they're in the conversation for being in the CFP. And then they lose. And like, okay, well, here we go again. And then they enter this game, Ketch. And, you know, you're just thinking mathematically, okay, well, how can they do this? Can they get past Iowa State? Blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, West Virginia loses. And, you know, even Tom Herman talked about they were playing the West Virginia Oklahoma State game on the Jumbotron here at DKR, and it was right in the end zone catch where the team warms up. So facing that Jumbotron, so even Coach Herman talked about it tonight, you know, so here we are trying to be 1-0 and not try to look forward, and they're playing a damn game. But he also said that is something that they talked about beforehand is as far as making sure they have that focus. And now, you know, we saw the best defensive performance.
I'm sorry.
What did you see? What is it?
Steven Jermark reminded me of Hard Knocks, where it wasn't it Jarvis Landry, every time he would catch a pass, would say, bless him. Yes. Did you watch that? Do you remember that? Okay, I'm sorry. Now that I'm saying it out loud, it doesn't seem so funny, but I thought Steven's hashtag game was slightly humorous.
Okay, that's pretty good. I'm gonna go as I'm looking, Ketch. I think Anthony had a question for you. I'm gonna finish up my thought, but I want you to answer here. Here we go. It's gonna be Anthony, but I want you to formulate your thought. So let me finish up mine. So, you know, we like you said, we talked about, you know, Colin Johnson's probably not at 100%. But he goes out and he's solid. Little Jordan, when you talk about Little Jordan catch, I'm always one of those guys that I'm iffy on guys going pro after their junior year, unless they feel like they're going to get a first round grade, second round grade, because you got to give yourself a cushion. Like, because you can say first round, but first round can easily turn into second round because you just don't know how things are going to fall. Second round or third round can easily turn to fourth round. So you got to be careful with that. He's a guy, the way he's playing, though, Ketch. If you decide at the end of the year, screw it, I'm just going to give this thing a try, I can't even be mad at him. I wouldn't even be mad at him.
My eyeballs tell me that kid's a top 50 pick in the NFL draft. And, like, I don't know how he's going to run. I know this. NFL teams will put his film on, and he can do everything. He can do everything. And I actually worry a little bit more about Colin Johnson at the next level. You know why? Because Tom's told us about Colin, right? Like, when they've gotten the "why can't you get the ball to Colin Johnson" rhetoric, Tom has been kind of open, like, well, look, Colin's diversity in terms of route running isn't what it's needed to be. And we've seen a different level of physicality from him this year than we did a year ago. And that's made a lot. But I mean, Little Jordan Humphrey, it's like, get him the ball by any means necessary. And when you get him the ball, like tonight, he had the play where he drugged the pile like a half dozen yards or so early in the first half. And that wasn't just the Texas offensive line, like, pushing him forward. He would not go down. And then you had the catch along the sidelines that the ball gets bobbled, but then he catches it. And then the touchdown play was very Hakeem Butler-esque in terms of catching the ball, shucking the defensive back down to the ground, and then getting into the end zone. I just thought that he was sensational again. And I've seen lesser players than him not run great 40 times and still end up NFL top 50 picks. I can't speak of what I think happens to Colin Johnson should he declare early, because I think it might come down to how well he runs. But I think Lil Jordan Humphrey is an NFL football player playing college football right now. And if that dude just says at the end of this season, it's time for me not to play for free anymore, then I get it. I get it. Because I think he's ready to play at that level from a football skills talent standpoint. If he's like, hey, I want another year of college and I enjoy it, and this is what I want to do, is stick around like Ricky Williams did, then right on. But in terms of like who he is as a college football player, he has the looks of a guy that will be playing on Sunday soon. And hey, kudos to him, man. Like, this isn't the system creating a player that, you know, this isn't, you go to Oklahoma and you put up these pinball offensive numbers. And I will go back to that question in a little bit. But I just, when we think about Lil Jordan Humphrey, he's a self-made man. Like, he's, you give credit to the wide receiver coaches and Sam Ehlinger and, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, Lil Jordan Humphrey's just gone into beast mode. He's played like an animal. And I have nothing but respect for a guy that's absolutely turned it on and put himself into a position where he has a legitimate decision to make. We weren't necessarily talking like that about him when the season started.
No, I mean, not at all. And I mean, he's a 1,000-yard receiver. He's the last guy since what, John Harris was,
yeah,
you know, back in 2014 with Tyrone Swoops as his quarterback.
Wow. That may be the greatest achievement in Longhorn football history.
When you really think about it, and that's why I've always been critical sometimes of the quarterbacks. I'm like, you know, Tyrone Swoops had a 1,000-yard receiver. I don't know what you guys are doing. He is dominant. I mean, he's a guy, Coach, that it's interesting you said it, because they always talked about, when they talked about Colin Johnson, right? They would say, well, there was safety would cloud him. And so, you know, we just got to figure out things to do. But you and I both know, Ketch, the good elite ones get open. Like, because the good elite ones, they're going to get double. They're going to have a safety. And those guys just find a way to work within it. I think Colin Johnson benefits from another year back here. I think a guy like Little Jordan, again, he's got to see what the college advisory committee tells him. But
how much better can he get? Like, you know what I mean? Like
first round better.
I mean, it depends on what he thinks he's going to run, because if he's a 4.55, 4.6 guy, then he might as well go pro now.
Sure.
Because he's going to go where he's going to go. They're going to draft him as a football player, but he ain't ever going to be a first round pick. Like those, you know, I just I hope he comes back. Like, he's worth the price of admission, but you know, we saw guys on last year's team that we were like, okay, you know, that guy's starting to look like an NFL player. And I think we get it. Now, real quick, back to one of the questions that was asked earlier. Am I ready to believe? I don't know what that means. Like what, you know, I wrote a couple of weeks ago, it was okay for Texas fans to dream big with this team. You know what I mean? Like, this is a year in the Big 12. There's not a great team. Oklahoma is the highest ranked team in the Big 12. They just let Kansas drop 40 on them at home and over 500 yards of offense. I think that this is a Big 12 where a pretty good team is going to win the league this year. Now, that might be Texas. If West Virginia beats Oklahoma and they beat Texas in a rematch, I'll go, West Virginia was pretty good. They aren't great. This Texas team isn't great. This is the first time in 11 games that I think Texas has played a full 60-minute game, maybe 58 minutes. But offense, defense, special teams, it all came together tonight. And I think you celebrate that. I think Tom Herman was really frank and honest about his team after the game. And it may have been because he's trying to keep this team grounded and focused and really just beat Kansas next week, right? It was as if he was trying to sniff out the eating the cheese before the cheese could ever be put in front of his players. But he said he thought that they were, you know, playing above their skis to a certain degree, that, you know, they're overachieving, I think was a word that he used a little bit, which was interesting because a year ago he used such hyperbole to describe this team going into the year. And it feels like since this season started, he's really tried to be careful with the rhetoric that he uses with this team. But it seems like he gets it. Like, they week to week, they look, this team could lose to Kansas. I don't think they will, but this is still a team that lives week to week and needs to play at a level. They can't just roll up into anybody's crib and think that if they just show up, they'll win. That hasn't been who they've been. But look, if they show up and play at the level onward that they did in Lubbock, then this team will be playing in the Big 12 championship game and, you know, we'll be doing an onward tribute show. If they go to Lawrence and play the type of game that they did in Manhattan, we'll see.
Early prediction, Ketch. What do you think? I mean, the early prediction, we've seen that Kansas has been competitive, right? We know that Kansas has been competitive. We know they got a pretty good linebacker, but we know that this is David Beatty's final show. It's his last hurrah. They already know they got Les Miles coming in. So we've done this before, right, Ketch? Where we knew Charlie was done. We knew Tom was going to be here. And the players just went through the motions of the final game. And then they all were waiting for the press conference the following week. So you got guys who, Ketch, that final week, and I don't know if, I think we've talked about this before, but for those who don't remember, that final week after Texas lost to Kansas and they had to play West Virginia the following week, the Texas football staff cleaned out everything because they knew they were getting fired right after the season. So they went in that entire week and they were just like, we're done. So you know the Kansas football staff, they're spending this week cleaning out their offices. But they don't want to go back. Like, once you get fired, like, you're not trying to go back in and then clean up. Like, you want to have some sort of dignity where you just get fired and then you just walk out the building, right? So we know that the staff is probably semi-checked out. You know, the players know they're going to, this is it. And they'll just try to get through this as best as they can. And we know Texas has a ton to play for, and this is redemption for a lot of guys. But early thoughts, early projections, sway early. We say early, the game's on Friday, so maybe it's not that early to talk about it. What's your early thought about that game on Friday?
If Sam plays, I think Texas wins by a couple of scores. You know, it's one of those games that I feel like a little scary in the first half. Kansas will come out with, I think, a lot of fight and a lot of energy. Hannah asked, how close is this Texas team to being great? Not very, but I don't think that matters. Like, I don't – any successful season for the Texas Longhorns means you win a Big 12 championship and you play in a major bowl game. That is a season that defines success at Texas, and Texas has a chance to achieve that. If they do, they won't be a great team, but they will have accomplished something great. And, you know, I think that for this team, that'd be a monumental step forward in so many ways. To finish the thought about next week, I think that Texas is better than Kansas. I think if Shane plays in that game, I think it's like a 60-40 game for me for Texas. Whereas I think if Sam plays in that game, I feel like it's a 90-10 type situation for me. They're better than Kansas. I think Tom Herman will have this team's focus. You know what hurt Iowa State a little bit today? Was I felt like there was a game plan for Sam that when Sam went out of the game, and look, they only scored 7 points in the second half, so I can't beat up the Iowa State defense too much, but it felt like, you know, we know what Shane can do. Shane is the check down underneath King. And yes. Hey, it's cool when you can check down to a guy like Lil Jordan Humphrey, or you can throw underneath to him and he can just shuck a dude down. But if Shane had to play a lot, that Texas offense is suddenly playing in a phone booth. And, you know, I think tonight the Texas offense finished with a yards per attempt over 9 when you combine both what Sam and Shane did together. It wouldn't be the case if he played the entire game and they weren't able to stretch the field. And I think at that point it probably becomes a 4-quarter game. But if Sam Ellinger is able to go, then Texas will win next week. And I'm you know, if Sam had played tonight, Texas would have broke 40. It just you know, they went super conservative because they had a 2-score lead and the Iowa State wasn't doing it. And Texas left points on the board at the end of the first. Texas kind of self-destructed when they got the field goal and they missed the field goal. And then, you know, when Sam got knocked out of the game, there was a part of me that thought he was about to break through. We'd seen him make guys miss in space. And even on the touchdown run at the very beginning of the game, Sam was making guys miss and it truly was looking like a difference maker in the run game. I thought he was either going to score or get the first down when he got hammered. Texas could have easily have scored 35 points in the first half and they didn't. And the game never, and it always felt like for the entire game until the Lil Jordan touchdown that they were just one last play for putting a ribbon and bow on this thing. But I think they could have had that before David Montgomery even took the field in the third quarter. Like they just didn't quite score as many points in the first half as they could have. Otherwise, it could have been a boat race early.
But that's a really, really, really good point, Ketch. It's interesting because, like you said, it potentially could have been worse because I think the one thing we've seen Sam do pretty well this season, Ketch, is when it comes, a couple of things, right? When he has to play what's viewed as a really good defense, like West Virginia or Iowa State, for the most part, he kind of finds a way to get things done. And you did feel that way that in the second half, he would probably find a way to get things done. We do know that if it's time to get into a track meet, we've seen it versus Tech. We've seen it versus Oklahoma. We saw West Virginia. We know the guy can hang. Like it's not like last year. If a team gets up too much, like this team doesn't have a shot. So we know what Sam can do. He's really, his control of the offense has probably been one of the biggest stories, if not the biggest story of this year, has been his emergence into being, you know, as a former NFL guy, Ketch, I don't know how to describe it other than the franchise quarterback, but becoming the franchise quarterback. And Ketch, you understand, in the NFL, when you have a franchise, you either have a franchise quarterback or you don't, and you're still searching for one. Like that's the NFL world. So you are either the Clevelands of the world who are going to go do it every single year, or you're the New Englands. And, you know, hell, even Matthew Stafford's had a job for a billion years and no one's ever going to unseat him. Sam Ehlinger has just become the franchise quarterback. Now, to someone on our thread in here pointed out something, which I think is pretty valid, but Texas has won two games this year with their backup quarterback, which being Shane. So it's not sexy. We know what Shane is, and we know it's going to be conservative. It's not, you know, it's they're going to lose yards. The offense is going to sputter at times. There was a streak in there, though, where he looked pretty good and he looked pretty comfortable in there. But, you know, they weren't able to really, really close out the show. But you have very valid points. And let me just say two things to people who have said things repeatedly. I just want to make sure I comment on certain things. I am not getting sick. Just got a little bit of allergies. So that's maybe why my voice sounds a little bit weird. And those who are asking why I wear a tie, honestly, I wear a tie every once in a while. I probably wear a tie more times than I don't wear a tie. Sometimes I don't. But last week, when I was at a road game, somebody from UT saw me and they actually gave me a hard time about not wearing a suit. And I said, man, it was cold. Like I was really worried about, you know, being cold in Lubbock. And they were like, well, you know, you should go buy a trench coat and be more professional. So I was kind of, not in a dick way, not in a dick way. They're joking.
I don't know. That kind of sounds like a dick way of saying something.
Well, Ketch, I think we know that people don't mind saying dick shit to me. So we know what happens in the elevator and things to that effect. But it's okay. So I just made sure I just put it on. And I saw him dressed down today, and I didn't get I tried to yell at him, but I couldn't get his attention after the game. So anyway, just wanted to throw
those two things. Unless it's Chris Del Conte, right? Because he's dressed up to the nines every week.
Yes, and he's the one that Herman said had the $5,000 suit, not me.
Yes, yes. I thought. Yeah, look. How was the atmosphere tonight?
It was. I don't know how much they showed you guys on TV. There was a moment in there where it was like a concert. Everybody basically put on their cell phone lights to, I think it was the Journey song. Is it Journey, Don't Stop Believing? Right. Yes. Give a brother credit, right? Give a brother credit for that. Thank you, cable television. But it was like a concert atmosphere, and it was organic. It was something that wasn't planned. It just happened to be something that they did. Electric would be a way to describe it. It was, Chris Del Conte, Tom Herman talks about it, but he's made this into a really, really, really cool, unique environment. Ketch, when I first got on the beat, right? The one thing that struck me the most about Texas was that I would go to all these other road games, right? The electricity outside the stadiums would just be like, wow, what is going on here? Like, I feel this. I like this. You go to Oklahoma State and you got Eskimo Joe's or something like that where you could go to. And, TCU's got a little good environment outside the stadium and just a lot of different places. Then when I would come here to Texas, Ketch, I never had to worry about traffic. I always walk straight from the garage to the stadium. I mean, I didn't see any tailgaters, anything like that. Everyone was spread out. And look, you went to the OB tailgate today. You see the difference of it. The atmosphere here is different. It's more of a college football environment. You know, I felt like it was kind of a stale pro environment. But when you see the stadium erupt when they start playing, you know, Mo Bamba and everyone's going crazy. I'm always wondering how many people are saying the N-word when that song's played.
Careful.
Just interested. But outside of that, I saw actually, what's the name, Sheck West. If you get bored, like look up like a Sheck West live concert. And it was this concert where he did, I think it was must have been the summer where he was doing the Obama song. And he was doing the uncensored version. And this crowd was predominantly white. And everyone's just singing all the N-word songs. And I'm just like, this is awkward. This is awkward. But anyway, good environment today. Good environment. Just that was a quick sidebar as we're going past midnight and we start uttering random things.
Yes.
That was definitely really cool.
I don't have a whole lot else to say. Are there any questions? I mean, look, I feel like I'm reiterating a point that I've made a lot throughout us talking, which was, you know, we could go position by position, and there were just a lot of things football wise that were really good tonight. The quarterback play combined was really, really good. Very quietly, the running backs were really good. You know, Trey Watson had the big run, the longest run of the season, 39 yards, which is crazy for me that 39 yards is the longest run of the season. Keontae Ingram, you know, he came in a little earlier this week. He was in on the second drive instead of the second quarter. And then Iowa State put Texas back on. This was on the drive where Keontae Ingram scored the touchdown to make it 14-3 or 14-0, whatever the score was. And I think Iowa State had them pinned back to the 3 or 4 yard line. And Texas went on like a 95, 96 yard drive. And on that big, long drive that culminated in a touchdown, Keontae Ingram had 61 of the 90-ish yards on that drive. We haven't even said his name tonight, and he was good. And Colin Johnson had a big start, and you know, all the receiving core, Devin Duvernay had some plays, and Jerod Hurd had a catch, and clearly little Jordan Humphrey was the standout. I thought the offensive line, outside of the middle of the offensive line, those dudes from Iowa State gave Zach Shackelford and Patrick Vahe fits. But by and large, you know, in the first half, they absolutely dominated the line of scrimmage. And Texas at one point was averaging 6.5 yards per carry and just ramming it down their throat. And there's nothing, I have nothing negative to say about the defense. That is the defense the Texas fans, coaches, and players have been waiting to see all season long. There wasn't anything that Iowa State really did well offensively. And there wasn't of all the layers of the Texas defense, from the defensive line to the linebackers to every guy in the secondary, I thought everybody was really good. And I think even on special teams, I think maybe the unsung hero of the night was the freshman punter who was able to pin Iowa State back deep a couple of times. And in a game where they just couldn't sustain any long drives, and Texas wasn't allowing Akeem Butler to do what he wanted to do, those punts that kept pinning them back inside the 20, inside the 10-yard line, I thought, like I said, very quietly, I thought he might have been the unsung hero in what ended up being a 24-10 win.
All right, so Ketch, we got some questions coming in. And by the way, Craig Max says this is a very subdued post game after a huge win. What the hell? Craig, it's midnight, man. I'm just be honest with you. I mean,
I feel like our energy's been good.
I don't feel like we've downplayed anything, but we're not screaming. We're not Dick Vitales of the world, but I feel like we're very positive about everything. But look, we got some questions coming in. Just hang in there, Craig. Why don't we just knock out a few questions before we go? So
sure, guys.
Hardy Jansen wants to know who takes over for Vahe next year.
I think that's probably something that gets determined in the offseason. I think that that offensive line position is an area where, you know, we'll see. The young freshman is the guy that I think they have the highest hopes for. And he was a massive recruiting target for them. We just have to see. I think that there are young guys that could develop into that role. And I think that would be the best thing possible.
Jeremiah Padgett wants to know, who do you prefer if Texas beats Kansas?
I mean, West Virginia, I think, is a more easily beatable team. I think Oklahoma is a not as – I think the Oklahoma offense against the Texas defense isn't as good of a matchup for Texas should have beaten West – Texas did that thing against West Virginia that they've done against a lot of teams this year. Through three quarters, they were the better team. And then they were one play away from getting a two-score lead on West Virginia and really creating separation, and they never quite got there. But they were better than West Virginia for most of that game. Now, I realize playing in Austin versus playing at a neutral site field, even in Dallas, is a different animal. But I think Oklahoma is better than West Virginia. So I would, if I were a Texas football fan, always remember the number one rule for Jeff Ketchum as it relates to the Oklahoma Sooners. Nothing good for Texas ever occurs through Oklahoma doing good. The answer is always root against Oklahoma. Always. That's the answer. Like, always. So that Texas is in a position next week where they truly don't have to worry about who wins as it relates to their fate. Oh, yeah, you want to see Kyler Murray sitting his little ass at home with the Bo Jackson pose, not making it to the conference championship game. That's what you want to see. What you don't want is to have to, I think, beat Oklahoma twice in the same season. I think it becomes very unfair for Texas that, you know, they play Oklahoma in a rematch. They have to beat Oklahoma twice. And as it would turn out, Oklahoma would only need to beat Texas once. You know, let West Virginia win next weekend in Morgantown, handle your business in Lawrence, and then beat West Virginia. And you can say you essentially cleared out the division.
Someone wants to know, when is the Dan Marino interview? Not quite sure what this is about.
Well, isn't that Dan Marino's face in his avatar?
Oh, okay. Then all right. Then I didn't know if it was something was Yak related or not. I put something else on Jason Mendez. Chances of Colin and Lil Jordan coming back next year. We kind of touched on it. Don't give a percentage. You know, but what do you think? Or what are you thinking? Don't give a percentage, because you know what happens when people forever hold percentages in their mind.
I think Lil Jordan Humphrey is gone, barring an injury, barring something unforeseen. My gut tells me Lil Jordan Humphrey's played his way into the NFL. Collins was on his way. You know, Collins got, you know, if you told Colin Johnson right now, he'd be the 10th receiver drafted, because I saw like Todd McShay has him as the 10th rated wide receiver in the draft. That probably means he's going early third round.
Yes.
I think if you tell Colin, this is my opinion. I think if Colin Johnson knew today that he was going to be in the third round, and he looked up the money that Malik Jefferson made by being in the third round this past year, like, we'd be looking at that going, okay, that's $5 million guaranteed. It's a signing bonus of like 2.5. Yeah, I think with Colin Johnson, in my opinion, let's see how these last couple of games end. If he has a huge bowl game performance, if he has a big Big 12 championship game performance, then I think Colin Johnson could go. If it's a lot of what we saw tonight, where, you know, doesn't put up the huge numbers, really didn't have a huge role in what happened on the field tonight. He was big in the first drive, kind of a bystander for much of what happened the rest of the night. Then I think he'd do the opposite of Lil Jordan, which is play his way out of the draft.
Has he eclipsed 700 receiving yards this season?
I'd have to look. I mean, he's been limited the last couple of weeks. He was on pace just a couple of weeks ago for a 1,000-yard season. Him going out and now Lil Jordan being the recipient of all those extra targets and yards has put Lil Jordan from having a 1,000-yard season. Look, it will come down to how many games Lil Jordan plays, but it's conceivable that Lil Jordan still has another 3 games left in the kitchen. But Lil Jordan could finish with 1,400 yards receiving.
Yeah, that'd be major. Okay, how does this win help with recruiting? And do you know who was here today, Ketch?
I mean, all the names that were supposed to be here today were here. I think Zach Evans, getting him on campus, the 2020 running back, which is funny because he took a picture. There was a tweet that came out that I think came from Zach Evans where it was a photo with him and Ricky Williams. And Ricky, first of all, he looks so small now. Like, Ricky looks like just your stoner uncle as opposed to the one of the greatest football players these eyes have ever seen live in person. And so he's got this big old smile on his face, and Zach Evans looks like he could care less that arguably the greatest running back in the history of college football was standing next to him for a picture. The Chris Del Conte and the atmosphere of this game does more than the game itself. Wins and losses in any one game during the season rarely impacts the decision a kid makes. Look, some of these kids are going to be signing in less than a month. Like, their decisions are made. Does it help a lot? Look, Texas has already got some pretty good momentum. I don't know that I think it just continues that. What games like this have a chance of doing is keeping the momentum going. It doesn't start anything new, but they didn't lose any momentum. And I think that's as important as anything at this stage in the process. Every kid that showed up tonight saw a show, saw an atmosphere, saw what felt like an event. It wasn't a boring game. And I feel like if you, regardless of the position that you play, you could probably watch the game tonight and feel like, yeah, no, I can see myself playing here and I can watch this team and realize there's a lot of areas where they still need help. Didn't factor tonight. But I think looking in the road, you know, if you're a receiver, you could look at this Texas offense and go, okay, you know, once Lil Jordan and Colin are gone, there's playing time available for everybody. And I feel like you could even look at running back and go, well, man, Keontae Ingram's really good, but somebody's got to replace that Trey Watson workload. So I feel like tonight was nothing but good things. I have nothing other than the Sam Ellinger injury and the fact that it is a short week on War.
Yes.
That would – I don't know that one day will make the difference between Sam Ellinger playing and not playing next week. All things being equal, you'd like a full week, though. I wonder if it means that they'll have to make their decision on Wednesday. Like, everything gets cut short a little bit. So Monday and Tuesday – I don't know. Like, do you give Sam Ellinger the week? And if he doesn't practice at all – they didn't do that against Baylor. Like, I think they had an idea. Okay, Sam's not ready. There's so much on the line. I don't know. Like, I don't know how they play this, but my guess is he doesn't do a lot early next week. That's the thing. That's that. The whole thing comes down next week to me is whether or not Sam's there. I do worry slightly because here's the thing. I don't know that a Texas offense under Shane is good for more than 24, 27 points on the road. I think Kansas can score that many. So, you know, I think if Sam plays, Texas could get in the 40s and it won't make a big difference. But I think, like I said, it gets a little hairy for me if I know that Shane has to play a full 60 minutes, whereas I don't have any confidence issues lingering at all if I know that Sam's going to play.
I'm going to answer this question, and I got one more question to you. We'll close it out. So Jeremiah Padgett wants to know, do you think Hermes is calling plays, or do you think Beck has been pretty good this year? Jeremiah, I'm going to need you to subscribe to Orange Bloods. I'm going to need you to get on that. Your question reveals to me you're not on OB. And we're going to have Black Friday sale coming up soon. And I'm going to need you to go on Orange Bloods, because if you have been on Orange Bloods, I answered that question after the Maryland game.
Like two months ago.
This has been well known. And this is what you're missing out on when you're on the outside looking in, depending on outside sources and not inside sources to give you your information. If you are a real Longhorn fan, a real true Longhorn fan, $9 a month to be amongst your Longhorn community and get inside info is going to be exactly the best investment and the best investment you can make in yourself. Always remember, there's never a wrong investment if you're investing in yourself. Always remember that. So I'm not going to give you the answer.
to that because point,
the Iowa has its own orange bloods. Go ahead, Kev.
Anwar, I'm not going to answer it. I won't say the name out loud because I'm going to follow your lead and not say it out loud. I thought the man calling plays tonight, this was the thought that I had in the first half before Sam got hurt. A, if I'm a decision maker at Texas, I'm feeling really good about the guy that I hired and the display that I'm getting from him in his alleged area of expertise. Two, I really thought that the offense was – I thought the first drive of the game was perfect, just perfect. And I thought much of the first half, again, they could have scored more points than they did. It's so night and day. And the guy that is in control cannot ever relinquish it. He just has to know, like, it's too big of a risk to take the hands of that out of somebody who's really good with it. And, you know, I wonder towards the end of the season if the guy calling plays truly can appreciate how good of a job he's doing.
Yes. Okay. Let's close it on a lighter note, because we haven't really addressed this too much. What did you think about the Michelle Herman T-shirt that is out there that she wore today?
I have multiple thoughts. Most of them positive. Let's start with the positive. I love the fact that Michelle Herman, at least publicly, isn't being shamed by some fucking asshole who's a wife beater and likes to make victims out of women. Like, I like the fact that Michelle Herman's response tonight was, I will not be anyone's victim. I dug that about her, right? Like, she could have hid. She could have, I don't know, there's a lot of things that she could have done. What she did was, to me, scream out loud, hey, little former coaching boy with the little peewee dick who can't, you know, act like a grown up online, you can't harm me. And I appreciated the bravado of a woman standing up and saying, however you're trying to shame me, you won't shame me. So bravo to Michelle Herman for not letting that guy make her into some, like, you know, that thing could have a variety of impacts. It seemed like she was trying to let the world know, I'm cool and fuck Zach Smith. Cool. On the other hand, given that the topic has been respectively left alone by Texas football media, by most of the media, you could make the case that by her wearing the shirt, it's a topic that if someone wanted to follow up, I think it would have been warranted because it was a statement along with the Twitter statement. And I would just say this, Zach Smith's credibility is super, super in the toilet. But some of those accusations were such that I wouldn't want to completely make light of what has, you know what I mean? Like, there's a little part of me that went, I don't know that I feel completely right about that, but that's a very minority feeling for me. If you were to, if this was a slice of pie and you were asking how big of the slice of pie was the positive part, it was the overwhelming part of the pie. But I wouldn't be me if I didn't acknowledge that you can make the case that the T-shirt is slightly in poor taste. I just don't know that you can totally say that about the woman who was being made, I think, to be embarrassed and mocked and shamed, and she wouldn't let that be. She controlled the narrative, a week later, and I'm completely okay with that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Catch. I mean, look, we, you know, as a media member, you know, just decide that that's personal. There's no NCAA violations involved in here or allegations of NCAA violations. So that's that. Whatever happens or has happened, that's between them. But we know, you know, she's had to be feeling some type of way. Zach Smith is painting, you know, went on a tirade on Sunday. So I don't know what the fuck Zach Smith was on Sunday, but whatever it was, it gave you a better picture into probably what his wife, ex-wife had to deal with.
He's such a horrible guy.
Because if this is Zach Smith on his best Twitter behavior, like, what is this guy like when he's just behind closed doors and has been drinking for a while? Like,
well, he's the type of guy that his wife needs to get a restraining order against him. That's the type of guy he is.
Then there's that. So what, you know what, things happen in people's lives. And you know what, I've always taken the road. If she, as the woman, has forgiven him or gotten past it, it's got nothing to do with me. There's no need for me to bring it up. Right. So if she was, you know, that was her statement. And I think your point is very valid, Catch, that she's not going to be ashamed. She's not going to be backed into a corner, and she's not going to let Zach Smith make her feel like she's some sort of wrong and that she's a bad person for something that her husband has allegedly done. Props to her. If that made her be able to walk around and not feel shame today with all the faces, you know, all the faces are on her, everyone's looking at her. And if that was her middle finger, it said, screw you guys, I'm going to be okay, and I'm all right. Good for her.
I do think we wouldn't have said Zach Smith's name once the entire night had it not been for that. So I'm not saying that Michelle Herman didn't deserve a forum to say whatever it is that she needed to say. You know, a case can, again, because I don't want to make it sound like I'm stressing the negative when I'm more about her feeling empowered than anything else. You can just make the case that, you know, if there was another person, non-sports related, let's use a politician. If a politician had been accused of the things that Tom Herman had been accused of, and then his wife came out with that shirt a week later, like, I think it would play, differently in depending on the realm that you do something like that in. And I think that it's sports. We don't quite treat things the way we would do in other situations. I guess as a man in 2018, getting ready to go into 2019, it feels like some things are better left not joked about. But I mean, look, Michelle, the universal response to this has been Michelle Herman is a badass. Michelle Herman said what she needed to do. Can I say one more little weird thing?
Go for it. As I'm trying to figure out if I can possibly block one of these people here. Linda, hang in there. I see what's going on. Let me work on this.
There's a little part of me that just didn't want to incentivize or motivate Zach Smith to do anymore. And, sure, you know, and maybe he won't, like, maybe we've seen it all, but look, the game was played at night. Look, we know Zach Smith was watching, right? Like, it seems pretty clear that Zach Smith is all in on his obsession with Tom Herman and the Texas football program. 'Cause he was a tweeting ass fool last week. And the week before that, and, you know, so he's seen it, like, he knows. And there's a part of me that just wants Zach Smith to go away forever. I don't want to hear about him messing with Michelle Herman and Tom Herman. I don't want to hear about him in relationship to his wife. I don't want to ever hear that he owns a gun, right? Like, if I go the rest of my life and never have to read a story that involves a gun in Zach Smith, awesome. Like, that guy to me is so on tilt that I worry about people. I do. And like I came away from this past weekend worried about his ex-wife again, that she's going to have young kids and she has to deal with him for like the next decade at a minimum. Like eventually this dude will go away and Tom and Michelle won't ever have to deal with this guy again. But man, it's hard to get rid of baby daddy that fast. It's hard to get rid of father of your children that fast. And he's a guy that needs a lot of help and might not be able to be saved. And I just pray for the women in his life that the worst of whatever the hell he's going to do is done with. And who knows, maybe at some point this guy can turn his life around and maybe figure out that he'd do himself a lot of favors if like he started acting like a decent person.
Yeah. But you know what? That's going to take a realization from him. And by the way, guys, I've done my best to ban that idiot who's trolling everyone. So he is going to have to create two more fake accounts because that has definitely been taken care of. The problem is, Ketch, I think that's going to take a self-realization for him that he just doesn't have at this moment, because right now all he has is vendetta and all he has is vindictiveness. And all in the sad part is, Ketch, there's no accountability on Zach Smith's part for anything that he's done, like not a single thing. And so all he does is sit around and say, you know what? It's freaking Tom and Michelle who fucked up my life. It won't even sad to say, you know what? Chalk it up to the game. Like, you know what? I did this and I got to own it. Like, Ketch, you know, when you're young and, you know, sometimes guys do this, right? You're young and you're a player. Maybe kind of have a kind of a girlfriend. And then you start talking to another girl. And, you know, in many ways, you end up cheating on her. And then, but then when it happens to you, you get pissed off. And some things you just got to chalk up to the game. Like, some things you got to say, man, it's karma. Like, the shit just came back on me and I just got to own it. But there, you know, and by the way, Linda, no problem. He's never owned it. All his rants this that past Sunday was about, if I could just bury these people and embarrass them to the point where, you know, they feel horrible about themselves, horrible about their relationship, maybe somehow I'll win. It'll be very interesting to see what happens when Zach Smith starts getting hammered tomorrow afternoon. And he already knows what's being out there. And when he's in his hammered state, what's he going to say tomorrow? And it'll probably be more of the same. I mean, his only power play is to actually provide something that actually has some sort of validity. But there's a couple of things. Zach Smith, clearly in his mind, Ketch, is chalked it up that he's never going to coach again, because he is breaking a coaching fraternity code. Even if he doesn't like Tom Herman, you don't talk about what's going on behind closed doors. You just don't. And so you can never bring that guy as a part of your staff, because nobody would trust him. Nobody. Nobody.
You know what, though? I almost feel like I'd bet you lunch that one day he'll get a job in coaching again. You know why? Because he's connected. And connected guys get excuses made for them. And one of these days he'll make some fake level of contrition and he'll have some guy, because he's related to Earl Bruce, he'll have some hookup out there that'll be like, don't you believe in second chances? And, you know, he deserves a chance. He hasn't done it. Trust me. The sad thing is, at a high level, you're probably right. Zach Smith is cooked because the media exposure could never allow for him to have a job, but he'll get like a D2, a D3 job, something like that, because somebody in his family will make a phone call for him and somebody will play a card. And it's always the guy that gets out of jail 97 times and gets the 98th chance, right? It's always the guy that doesn't really deserve the extra chance when most people wouldn't. And mark my words, somehow, some way, Zach Smith one day will get a shot again. And we'll all just realize that for a lot of people, shots like that never arrive a second time. I just have a feeling with Zach Smith, he'll get his, sadly.
All right, dude, go ahead and wrap it up.
Real quick, like Renee makes a good point, right? Like all of that stuff should stay off the field. Mm-hmm. You can make the case that if Michelle wears the shirt like that, it makes it more of a story. Like, it's being talked about on social. Darren Revelle, you took your photo, which within like 15 minutes of me seeing the photo, it had over 200 retweets and 700 favorites, and Barstool picked it up and they stole it. And then Darren Revelle was tweeting it. Like, that stuff should stay off the field. You could make the case that, you know, it's only being talked about tonight because Michelle wanted us to, frankly. Like,
yeah,
she wore that t-shirt so that someone would take a picture of it and it would end up on Twitter. Like, that was like, Michelle Herman's not naive.
No.
Michelle Herman did not think, I can, you know, some people are naive. They're like, I had no idea that I would show up and walk out onto the field and they would have someone would take a picture of the shirt and then it would end up on social media. Because if they were worried about that, Tom would have been like, can't do it. Sorry, babe. You got to wear something else. Instead, Michelle Herman was like, fuck that. Let them take pictures. And if Tom even so much as suggested, I don't think it's a good idea. I'm guessing tonight Michelle gave him the hardest side eye that he's received in the event that he had anything to say at all than she would have on Sunday when the tweets were coming out.
Look, she basically gave him a get out of jail free card, which was, you don't have to sleep on the couch. You just need to let me wear this damn shirt. And him being a smart man, he said, he took the shirt. He said, sure, babe, you want to wear the shirt?
Because you know, Tom, hey, Tom's a coach, Anwar. You know that he was like, babe, do you really think that's a good idea? And she hit him with one of them. And he was like, oh, I mean, I was just. Yes. I just felt like I had to say it, but it was merely a question and not a suggestion. Like,
yes,
we've all been there.
Yes. Listen, if the alleged incident is true, the last thing you want to do is say anything to the person who's not giving you shit about it and they're about to defend you. You let that ride. You're like, wait, I'm not in the doghouse again? Yeah, no problem, babe. No problem. You wear the shirt. Wear those nice earrings that I got you too. Like, perfect. So yeah, while she risks, here's the thing though, Ketch, while she risks the chance of hitting the reset button, Zach Smith is so unhinged. He may have just decided on Sunday he was going to take a picture. He's going to say some shit anyway. So realistically, for her to say, you know what, Zach is probably going to do whatever Zach's going to want to do. Ain't nothing that's going to stop him. Screw it. I'm just going to let him know you're not going to phase me. You're not going to shame me. And I'm going to walk out here and be as sexy as I always am. No disrespect, Tom, but as sexy as I always am, I'm going to wear my shirt. I'm walking right past the media because I know we got to walk past the media to get in. I knew I was going to see them. Not a problem. Take that, Zach. You tweet that.
In a weird way, Anwar.
Yeah.
In a weird way, at least I won't go so far as to say, because I don't want to objectify Michelle. certainly, I don't ever want to objectify Michelle, but certainly not on a night when all of that's going on. However, I guarantee you, every coach in that coaching staff for Tom Herman thought to themselves at some point tonight, wish my wife was like that. Like, to a certain degree, right? Like, yeah. She is the ultimate ride or die wife that I've ever seen in the history of college football. And if I was Tom Herman, I would go home tonight and I would pamper her.
If I'm Tom Herman, I go home tonight, I pamper her. I take care of her. I tell her to pull out the laptop and say, what does she have that she has saved that she was thinking it had her eye on? Because you know what, baby? The holidays are coming and you definitely deserve something nice. What is it? And yes, because catch, just think about, let's take Tom out the equation, right? Just think about whatever you've had, that disagreement with your wife, or what you would feel like are some of the worst moments that you guys have had in your relationship. And I can think about some of the worst ones I've had. Man, my wife ain't forgot it. Like, she may not talk about it, but I guarantee you she's not wearing a t-shirt about it. Like, she's not going to wear a t-shirt that says Anwar wasn't as, you know, back in January, but, you know, hashtag it's all good, Anwar's an ass. Like, it's still like, you know what, we're just not going to talk about it because I just, like, that's definitely ride or die. That's definitely ride or die.
No, and we've used that phrase before, and I think Michelle Herman has given off that impression before. Actions speak louder than words, and the shirt tonight was a lot of action. If anybody's watching right now and they're like, well, I don't know about it, I get it. Like, I think I've paid proper respect to the idea that it could have been thought to be in poor choice. But as someone's mentioned, proceeds from the shirts are going to help battered women. That's cool. There are ways, I think, to take a questionable action, which is borderline, and to turn it into a power move. And ultimately, that's what she did tonight. She empowered herself and said, you will not force me into shame or victimhood. Go, girl. I got you on that. I feel you.
All right, Ketch. Hardy says, Michelle flipped the script like she was in Get Shorty. I know you're a movie guy. Sound about right to you?
Yes. I mean, you know, there's a lot of metaphors that can be used for what that was. At the end of the day, I think it stands out. Anwar, you and I could work for another 20, 30 years in this industry. Michelle Herman becomes a bit of a verb tonight. You know, the next time, I don't know that I've ever quite seen like that level of that clapback. But, you know, that was some Beyonce clapback is what that was.
All right, let's go wrap it up because people are starting to bitch that we've been talking about this subject for too long.
Well, we were going to be off for like a half hour ago. And then we started talking about, don't blame us that the single most viral and discussed thing from the game was her shirt. Like, you know, we wouldn't have talked about that at all had she not worn the shirt. That was my point in the first place. For myself and for Anwar Richardson, it's creeping up on 1 a.m. and he's still in the press box and I want to go to bed. And it's been a long day for the 86 of you who are still watching this. We love you. For the hundreds that dropped in to participate throughout our post-game show tonight, we appreciate you. We do love you as well, but we really like the ones that have hung out until the very, very end. We will do this again next week when Texas goes on the road in Lawrence, Kansas. Anwar will be there, and all that will be on the line, in addition to revenge, in addition to the last game of the season, is a little trip to something called a Big 12 championship game, something that the Longhorns haven't participated in since 2009. Wow. Hannah, thank you. You've been very participative. You participated a lot. Thank you very much. It's late. I can't even say the word participate anymore. So I'm going to bed. We'll talk to y'all next week. Having a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy the holidays with your friends and family. Be good to each other this week, people. It's the holidays. Later.